Radio Netherlands, the Dutch International Service, presents Teetering on the Brink. The program is produced and presented by Eric Beauchemin.
Tajikistan is still suffering from a large number of problems resulting from the breakup of the former Soviet Union. The economy was in a very dire strait before the drought hit, and now you have the combination of economic collapse and the worst drought in 70 years.
There is a segment of population which is around 235,000 people who are really in desperate need of assistance, like widows, like pensioners, and so on. But on the top of that, now we have over 800,000 to 900,000 people who were at one point who could survive and could win their bread, and who are now have no possibility to win this bread.
Across the Central Asian Republic of Tajikistan, farmers are preparing their land for the next planting season. The rains are supposed to begin within the next few weeks, if they come. Tajikistan, and much of the region, from Mongolia to the north, Pakistan to the south, and Georgia to the west, are experiencing their most serious drought in three quarters of a century. Nasra Safar Aliva is among those praying for rain.
I don't own my own land. Last year, I leased a hectare from the kolkhoz, the collective farm. I planted wheat, but the rains didn't come. I should have harvested 1,500 kilos of wheat, but all I got was 300 kilos. Since my husband died 2 years ago, I've been the sole breadwinner for my family of 10. But with this drought, it's not easy. All we eat now is bread. That's what we've been eating for months. If the drought continues and we don't receive help, all of us will die.
Nasra Safar Aliva is not alone in her desperation. Throughout Tajikistan, hundreds of thousands of people are surviving on bread, and if they're lucky, a bit of tea. 82-year-old Bibigul Pirova says she's never seen anything like this.
It's been 7 months since I last tasted meat or sugar. I've experienced difficulties in the past, but if I worked, I could earn some money and feed myself and my family. Nowadays, the shops are full, but no one has any money and there are no jobs. During Soviet times, I used to receive a pension of about $20. Now my pension is only 4,000 Tajik rubles, that's $2. You can hardly buy anything with that. I haven't received my pension for 2 months now, so all I eat is bread. I used to eat pumpkins too, but they all died this year because of the drought. I can't even afford tea now, so I'm just picking some leaves from trees.
Is anyone helping you out?
Even my children can't help me because they don't have enough for their own families. If there's rain, we'll be able to survive, barely. If it doesn't rain, only God knows what will happen to us.
Children now sing about their independent nation, but many adults long for the old Soviet days. Tajikistan was born in late 1991, after the collapse of the Soviet Union. It was the poorest republic in the former USSR, and people were hoping for a better future. A few months after independence, civil war broke out in this Central Asian nation. Within less than a year, 50,000 people were killed and 800,000 forced to flee. It wasn't until 1997 that a peace agreement was signed. By then, says Bushanhad Sheikh, the country director of the WFP, the World Food Programme, most of Tajikistan's infrastructure had been devastated.
Unfortunately, the mechanism which has been destructed has not been replaced, and therefore everything was disorganized. Canals were abandoned and the land is abandoned. Can you imagine that 35% of the land is saline land? So definitely for several years, 5-6 years, no one has worked in the land and no one has tried to produce for security reasons, for different reasons, they couldn't do it. And on the top of that, there is a problem of fuel, there is a problem of all the network which is needed by a society to keep in motion.
The collapse of Tajikistan's infrastructure and economy has been felt throughout society. 85% of the population now live below the poverty line. Nearly half of Tajikistan's children are malnourished. Over 10% of them are severely malnourished.
Of course, the number of street children increased, and it was a new phenomenon in our country also.
Mojo Darakhmanova is the director of Refugee Children and Vulnerable Citizens, a Tajik charity which also runs a center for some of the 5,000 street children in the capital, Dushanbe.
Because after collapse, the economic system was crushed and the economical situation became very poor. And of course, a lot of jobless people appeared. And those parents who couldn't find job, of course, the elder children forced to go and to make some money. But they are not pure street children because they have parents. But as they are working in the streets and idling and begging, So we call them street children.
But they go home at night to go sleep.
Yes, they go home to sleep at home. We have some 7 children who are entirely orphans. But they came to our center and found friends here, and they are living in their families.
I noticed that many of these children are quite young, actually.
Yes, we have beneficiaries at the age of 6 years old up to 14.
And many of these children are the only breadwinners in the family?
Mostly, yes.
Kurshe.
And Kurshe, how old are you?
Hash.
He is 8.
Okay. Can you tell me when you first started to go on the street? How old were you then?
He was 6 years old.
Why did you go down to the streets?
Я раньше деньги не было, поэтому сейчас папа деньги говорит получим.
Because his father was not working and he has no money to support his education at school.
Хорошо, what were you doing on the streets?
Ходил один раз там на Птолском гуляли там по Прощенчилу-то.
Before, I was walking close to Putovsky Bazaar and I was begging with other children.
How much would you get a day doing that?
100 рублей, 200, вот так.
He made money around 100 or 200 Tajik rubles.
So that's not even 10 US cents. What did you do with the money?
Маме, папе отдавал, чтобы хлеб чем-нибудь купить.
And he gave to his parents in order to buy some bread.
Do you get to eat enough every day, or are you hungry sometimes?
Я питание получаю когда-нибудь.
He received food when they have money.
So sometimes you're hungry.
Если голодный буду, сюда прихожу 4-ю школу с утра, потом из 4-й школы иду сюда обедаю, потом домой пойду.
He says that if I am hungry, I am going to school, and after school, I am coming here to have some food.
Do you ever get to eat meat?
Мама ходит это на базаре вот эти магазин ларек этот мой ты там косточки даешь мы навар делаем и там чуть-чуть у меня собрызаем на суп и все.
He says that my mother is cleaning some shop and she is bringing bones with small meat and she is preparing soup. This is a kind of meat for me.
In many ways, Khurshe and the other kids in this center for street children in Dushanbe are quite lucky. They get at least one complete meal a day, and most of them have parents who are trying to take care of them as best they can. More and more parents are simply unable to cope anymore. They're taking their children to orphanages like Khunay in southern Tajikistan. Sharipov Taravali is the chief administrator.
Out of the 95 children in this orphanage, only 12 have lost both parents. All the others have at least one parent. Some of them were killed during the civil war. Others died of diseases. You see, after the war, there was a crisis. There wasn't enough food, and people were eating anything they could find. Some of them got sick and died.
But why are they here then, if they have a father or a mother?
People are bringing their children here because they have large families and they simply can't afford to take care of all their kids, particularly now because of the drought. Some people just have no choice. If we didn't set a limit, we'd have even more children here. But as it is, we don't have enough staff.
The drought is not only sapping Tajikistan's human potential. The country's rivers, lakes, and reservoirs are drying up too. So is any prospect of economic development. The Nurek power station, about an hour's drive from the capital, Dushanbe, is one of the biggest power stations in Central Asia. It's a hydroelectric plant and will soon have to cut back its output, says its chief engineer, Khojiv Bobosho.
Water levels this year are too low. In the past, we've always reached 54 meters. This year, it's less than 50. We can produce 11 billion kilowatts of electricity a year, but this year our output's going to drop to 10, or even only 9 billion kilowatts. The entire country is going to feel the impact starting this month. Irrigation is the government's priority, not electricity. The reason is that our neighboring countries also use our water for irrigation. The Aral Sea is drying up, so they need our water.
Thanks to centralized government policies, the effect of the drought has not yet been felt in the cities like Dushanbe. The capital's gardens and trees are still watered profusely. Thousands and thousands of liters spill out onto the streets and sidewalks. Carefree young people still stop by one of the open-air cafes on Dushanbe's main street to talk with friends and listen to music. They can't afford to have a drink, but they can still see and be seen. A few hundred meters away, the drugs mafia and the other nouveau riche hang out in the capital's casino. But the power cutbacks will soon also make even city folks realize the scale of the impending catastrophe. Even in a good year, Tajikistan isn't able to produce enough food to feed itself. But by last April, it started becoming clear that the nation was facing a disaster. According to Bushan Hadshikh, the country director of the World Food Programme, preliminary surveys were showing that the harvest would be about half of what it was the previous year.
Well, the situation is that for a country which is supposed to feed a population of 6.1 million inhabitants, there is a need for a little bit over 1 million metric ton of food. And the result of the harvest is around 236,000 metric ton, which means that basically they need to import or get assistance for the remaining 770,000 metric ton.
So in other words, they're only able to meet one quarter of their needs and they're going to need help for the other three quarters.
Definitely. The shortfall is very important. That's why we have assessed the situation in the country, assessed the needs of the population, and we think that to feed or help the most vulnerable segment of the society, which is around 1.2 million people in this country, we need around 126,000 metric tons for the next 6 months.
Keeping one in five people alive until the next harvest in July is a major logistical operation. The food has to be transported nearly 4,000 kilometers by rail from the Baltic port of Riga and then distributed to the neediest in this huge and sparsely populated republic in Central Asia. The WFP only plans to give food to the weakest. Most everyone else is going to have to work for the food, says Bushan Had Sheikh.
Our idea is not to have them in a position where they will be assisted. We believe that if they are 100% assisted, they may not come back to self-sufficiency and move and try to find a solution for their survival. So what we are planning to do is to set up different programs by which every able body in a family out of six or seven people, if he has the strength and he can work, we will organize with him, with the international organization and NGOs, food for work programs, which means that at the same time they are receiving food and they are feeding themselves, they are still working and winning their bread, but they are basically working on the rehabilitation of the land, rehabilitation of canals, rehabilitation of all this agrarian region to prepare for the next harvest.
Besides food for work programs to help restore some of the damage caused by the civil war and years of neglect, the World Food Programme's also trying to increase the country's agricultural output. During Soviet times, all farmers belonged to kolkhozes and sovkhozes, the Russian words for collective and state-owned farms. When the Soviet Union collapsed, so did these huge state enterprises. Much of this land has lain fallow for the past decade. The WFP has been negotiating with the directors of kolkhozes to lease plots for peasants who don't have any land. The results have been extremely encouraging, says Bushan Hadsheikh.
For each piece of land which has been given to these peasants, the production has tripled. They have been given land with the authorization of the kolkhoz, with the agreement of WFP, WFP providing the food for work for all the period of the 9 months or 12 months until the next crop. So basically for each ton of food that we have provided, the production of food has been more than tripled in fact.
Gobo Safar joined the land lease program last year. He's a teacher at a school around 150 kilometers south of the capital. He only earns $8 a month. He says he needs around $50 a month to support the 11 people in his family. Despite the drought, Goybov Safar still believes his survival depends on the land lease program.
I leased 1 hectare of land from the kolkhoz. WFP gave me some wheat, which I sold to rent a tractor and to purchase fuel, which is very expensive. I also had to buy oil for the tractor. Unfortunately, because of the drought, I only harvested 200 kilos of wheat. I should have got 8 times that. Part of the agreement was that I have to pay a tax in kind to the kolkhoz of 100 kilos of wheat. So I only got 100 kilos last year. I hope that the WFP will give us support again this year and that it rains. If I don't try to farm again this year, my family and I won't be able to survive.
Normally, the World Food Programme only gives people 600 kilos of wheat flour to tide them over till the first harvest. But the drought is forcing the WFP to review this policy. Even if the rains come, many structural problems will remain. The WFP is trying to address some of them, says Zarina Kurbanova, a WFP field officer in northern Tajikistan.
First problem in Tajikistan, we have gender gap, I can say. And therefore, we want to empower women, we want to help them. Because position of women are really terrible. They are working not only at home, they are working in the land. But nobody appreciates their labor on the land. They have no any incomes from this land. It means they are working like a slaver. Therefore, our aim to give food this woman to lift up their status in their family, in their village, that everybody could know that they got this food because they are working on the land. Because our survey shows that about 60-80% of work on land doing women. And therefore, it will be honest, it will be fair if women will get this food.
Both women and men are also being encouraged to find out about their land rights. The state still formally controls all land in Tajikistan, though it's begun, albeit timidly, to privatize the countryside. Since the beginning, land reform has been shrouded in mystery and confusion. Deliberately so, say critics. Some people want land, but they haven't been able to get it. Others have land, but don't know where it is. And yet others have land, but they're still being ordered to farm Tajikistan's traditional crop, cotton, for example. And if they don't, powerful figures, as they're called, simply turn off the irrigation system. After having worked on a kolkhoz all her adult life, Rustamo Asharafat finally got a plot of land in 1996.
We had no money, no food. We started baking bread out of barley or maize, but then we couldn't even afford to do that. I started going to the local authorities, everyone in a position of power, begging them to do something to help me feed my children. I asked them for a plot of land, for money, for anything, because my children were growing and they needed to eat. Finally, they gave me a plot.
But in many ways, that was the beginning of a new series of woes for Rustamo Asharafat.
During Soviet times, we had to farm. We were divided up into brigades, and the leader told us when to sow and what we should plant. Now we're independent. My husband and I decide what we should plant and when. But it hasn't been easy these past 4 years. We had no fuel and no money to hire a tractor. Our seeds were of very poor quality, and we didn't have any fertilizers, so we just threw the seeds on the ground. Our harvests were very bad. I'm hoping now, with help from the World Food Programme, that we will be able to buy better seeds and fertilizers, and that our harvest will be better.
Many people in Tajikistan are as desperate as Rustamo Asharafat. Few are as determined. But as desperation grows, Bushan Hajjar Sheikh believes it's essential to try and help more people find out what their rights are and make the land reform program more transparent.
My colleagues in the field have set up an awareness session, especially towards the women, making them aware that this piece of land has been given to them and therefore they are not under any control and they can produce whatever they want. At the beginning, they have received some pressure from some decision makers at the level of districts and so on, and pushing for production of cotton, for example, which is the white gold of their country. But in spite of these pressures, some of these beneficiaries have decided that the priority for them is to feed themselves. And therefore, they have decided to produce vegetables or wheat.
Even if the rains do fall over the coming weeks and months, Tajikistan will not be out of the woods. The past decade has destroyed too much in this poor Central Asian nation. Charities and UN agencies hope small income-generating activities will help revive the moribund economy.
I think that if I learn how to sew, I will be able to help support my family. I have 4 children, and my husband is a teacher, but he only earns 20,000 rubles a month, and that's only $9. I already have a sewing machine, and I don't think that I'll have much trouble finding customers.
Sharifa Karimova's confidence, however, may be somewhat misplaced. Even small-scale businesses are being affected by the unstable economy, says Savagolova Leiva, who's in charge of the sewing center.
As you know, the exchange rates are constantly fluctuating. Sometimes the women buy materials at high prices, and then when they want to sell the finished product, their customers demand lower prices because the exchange rate has dropped. Besides, people hardly have any money nowadays. Almost everyone pays in kind rather than cash.
But some people have money and they're willing to spend it. In many districts in Tajikistan, community development centers were established in the wake of the civil war. One of the main aims of these local non-governmental organizations is to try to stimulate economic development. Khusad Oyadomwodov's community development center has just created a timber processing plant.
The local authorities can't create jobs here, so they're happy that we've done this. Because of the drought, we need to encourage other types of economic activity. The Community Development Centre has given money to start beekeeping, potato cultivation and timber processing companies. We're employing 8 people here, but we'd like to hire more. Most of our employees are skilled. We also employ some supporting staff.
This is a food deficit country at the height of the production. This country cannot meet all its needs. However, if this country is given assistance in terms of food, first, to put this country on its feet, but also be given assistance to improve canals and machineries and so on and so on, this country could suffice to its needs. It's a matter of land reform. It's a matter of water management.
But this rehabilitation work and these reforms are going to take years to implement. The World Food Programme has prepared an emergency operation to feed over 1.2 million people in Tajikistan, that's 1 in 5, over the coming 9 months till the next harvest. Up to 2 million actually need some assistance. But the WFP is having difficulty getting donors to provide funds for the emergency operation in this forgotten corner of the former Soviet Union. For people like 60-year-old Pil Ahmed, this is a matter of life and death. He's been reduced to chopping down his last asset, the trees that line his backyard. They'll help him, his wife, his unemployed son-in-law and daughter, and 2 grandchildren get through Tajikistan's harsh winter. Pil doesn't even want to think about what will happen after that.
I had a good pension during Soviet times and my sons were working. Then the civil war started. My sons lost their jobs. My pension fell from $80 to $2 a month, and now I'm not receiving anything at all. I cut grass and straw and my trees to keep us going. I have about 30 trees left. After that, I don't know what I'll do. I never expected my life to end like this, but what can I do? My trees will get us through the winter, but I don't know what will happen next year. Only God knows.
Teetering on the Brink was produced and presented by Eric Beauchemin. Technical production, Marcel Boy. This has been a Radio Netherlands presentation.